SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good summer wrap up, race fans. Sirius 219 XM 201 Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and our website, SteveVick.com. And here it is, the Tuesday after Labor Day weekend. Where exactly do you start? I got quite a bit in yesterday. I thought, you know, we were able to tie together, what, about nine stake wins between three trainers yesterday. And then we had one afternoon, an early evening, not so early, actually, considering Del Mar going fairly late into the night, but on the East Coast. There was a lot going on yesterday to digest, and that included, you know, some last-minute scratches, including green light go coming out of the hopeful, Jimmy Jerkins, taking every precaution. I can understand. I understand why, you know, why they would do that. And what's amazing about green light go, you know, exiting at the fairly late, developing kind of decision, because the rain never relented. I mean, there were moments where it looked like the skies were lightening a little bit, but then more rain came, and it just was just not a pleasant way to, you know, close out an otherwise, you know, very good summer at Saratoga. But then hours later, In the Del Mar Futurity, you have the incident where Eight Rings ducks and drops Drayden Van Dyke, and holy cow! Here's your two, I mean, heavily favored and overwhelmingly likely type 2-year-old males closing out the meets. Luckily, nobody hurt Van Dyke and Flavian Pratt, who was affected as well. Flavian I'm going to forget now the name of Storm the Court. Both okay. Horses okay. And they'll dust them off and figure out what to do next. But, you know, to lose an opportunity at 1-2, which is what Eight Rings, you know, left the gate as a $3 proposition. And then, given what transpired beyond that portion of the race, the Rockingham pair, Nucky and Wrecking Crew, running 1-2, and Nucky, you know, ran fine, 35-1 under Norberto Arroyo Jr., Peter Miller, and wins off by a couple of lengths. The race was very slow, and he comes back with a 59 buyer, and it kind of reinforce the notion that Eight Rings, with a clean and uneventful trip, you know, most likely dominates that running. Can't say the same necessarily about Green Light Go, but for Steve Asmussen, a great way to close out the season running 1-2-3 in the hopeful. And it was Basin from out wide that wins easily and wins, I mean, with really with authority under Jose Ortiz. Jackpot Farm. Liam's map, and you know, I don't know if you saw, if you follow Sid. Sid had quite a few thoughts about this, and came up just as recently as last week with the Unbridled song. Legacy, let's call it, an heir to his stallion abilities. Well, this is a big win. This is a very big win for Liam's map as a stallion, and we'll talk tomorrow to Sid about that and get his thoughts. But what was notable about, I thought about this performance. Let's see, he went off. Yeah, he went off a 3-1. Godzilla took, in the absence of Green Light Go, Godzilla took a lot of the money. I ended up personally, I tried to get that American Butterfly, who I liked a little bit when he broke his maiden, in what was supposed to be Candy Tycoon's, you know, big breakout opportunity for him and his maiden voyage. We'll come back to Todd Pletcher in a minute regarding, you know, fancy two-year-olds. But I thought maybe American Butterfly had a bit of a you know, potential look in here, and he actually he took some money early and then floated up to 14-1, and I and ran well. He compromised. He ended up compromising Godzilla because basically Luis Saez and Santana hooked up, and the two of them were basically no, you know, had no response and were victimized later after going what 45-4. For the half, and here came Basin, who was, you know, basically sitting a beautiful trip, stalking outside, and shoplifted, you know, kind of, you know, came running up late to be second, and he got past Godzilla in the last jump. So 1-2-3 for the Asmussen horses in the absence of Green Light Go. The horse that was I don't want to say disappointing. By Your Side was, you know, when you restructure your tickets, and we'll talk about the pick six, probably talk about that with Andy tomorrow. But the, you know, the complication that Green Light Go posed when the decision came, and Dave Greinig circulating the news that Green Light Go was going to scratch. I mean, I personally was going to try to, it wouldn't have mattered in the long run. I was going to try to single Green Light Go and Governor Morris and, you know, spread in the other four races. That was my approach. And so having Green Light Go exit, you know, kind of made it tricky even further to build a ticket. Now, we all, I mean, I imagine anybody that had any medium-sized budget for that pick six singled Governor Morris. I did, and he was terrific. Absolutely everything that you kind of expected from him came to pass, and an 83 buyer for him, a very, you know, very conservatively handled by John Velasquez. And he got actually, I thought, a pretty good experience in here because he got bounced around a little right out of the gate, and you know, then Johnny, you know, settled him and then came and took over and won off. And if you did not see him gallop out, he galloped out and kept galloping out and kept galloping. He, I mean, that was quite notable. This was only 5.5 furlongs, so you got to expect he'll be champagne bound. And that gallop out probably was a mile by the time, you know, Johnny kind of lifted him up. I don't even think the camera stayed with him that long enough to see him, you know, ease up. So clearly this Constitution cult, an unbridled song actually involved in here as well as the sire of Addison Run. This was a Brogdon product, Macmerhall and Company, $600,000, 2-year-old in training purchase at the Gulfstream sale. And Team Valor and Windstar involved here. And Constitution is certainly getting it done. And in fact, let me see, the first out numbers are just gaudy. This is now the 27th debut of a Constitution product, 8 wins. Yeah. Constitution. Absolutely making a mark. And another, the Tappet. Son Tappet, sons of Tappet. Are we up to grandsons of Tappet yet? That's got to be getting close, right? I'll ask Sid that tomorrow. So Governor Morris at 3-5, he made 330 look good. And then you had do this a quick rundown. Danny California gets past Pipes late at 6-1, and so that knocked some people out. There were two obviously knockout horses in the sequence, and forever changed the Flashback filly for Charlie Baker, Happy Face Racing, and Hayfield, at even money. I guess you felt a little confident turning for home, but forever changed. Junior Alvarado kind of was looming down inside, came off and gathered up. The blinkers on, I suppose. I mean, if you're looking for there was certainly from a from a fig standpoint and that element, forever changed had to improve, but the blinkers may have contributed. And you got 26-20, and that was a knockout horse. That knocked me out. Kurban, long time between drinks, as they say, and the last time was the Bernard Baruch last year. Pretty funny. And he was terrific. And I know people are I see people asking about the course switch, and I honestly, was there going to be a big difference? You think Kurban, or I don't know. I would have preferred that they announce that, earlier. They make that decision and announce it, but I don't know. It's not like switching from turf to dirt. They still ran it on the grass, and Rosario with a very confident handling, and Kurban, if you heard Kieran McLaughlin, we should reach out to Kieran, because their big target was the Shadwell all along. And yeah, Kurban has run well it this year. It's just kind of circumstantial. Part of it is dealing with the likes of Bricks and Mortar in the Manhattan and the Turf Classic. But he was terrific in here. And, the mile and a 16th feels like it's just a little bit more to his liking. And you could see by the splits, how heavy the turf was. In fact, they even called it soft. So Kurban for Shadwell, the familiar blue and the white striped hat. And that got us to the hopeful in Basin, 8-20. And then the nightcap. And, of course, a down note, obviously, with the Antonucci runner, Burrow Boy, going wrong top of the stretch, past the eighth pole. Give or take. And Eric Cancel and he go to the ground. And just, you know, after a solid, from a safety standpoint, what had been a good summer out of Del Mar, they had a pristine, from a racing standpoint, they had a pristine summer. Not a single incident. And really, if you look at their, Jay Pribman wrote about this last night, the only incidents at all were in the morning, and by all rights, you had that freak accident involving the Carla Gaines and Baffert horses. I mean, that's just, you know, that's just bad luck. That's not a safety concern. So only two training incidents at all at Del Mar. They had a spectacularly safe summer. And here, Burrow Boy, the fifth fatality in the afternoons. But otherwise, a relatively safe summer overall. But that was not the way we wanted to end the summer. And certainly the 22-1 entry, Dr. De Vera's Way, Mertkan Kantamasi, and Benji Hernandez with the 7 pounds wins and rewards successful Empire Six players $23,800, basically. A good return, a real good return. And they did bet $4 million, as we kind of were playing around with how much you expected to see. And they bet actually five times, not four times the pot, five times the pot. So you ended up with a total pool of a little under $5.4 million. So a very nice return. And for those that have been asking about the return to Belmont and what's going on with the pick six there, the word is they'll expect to hear from the Gaming Commission this week. They expect approval to do the Empire Six at Belmont. And as soon as that approval comes, we will then get a feel for what they're, you know, how often there'll be a distribution. You know, and based on what we saw at Saratoga, you would think that about every three weeks. And for those of you that are wondering too, word continues to come from Dave O'Rourke that there is no firm decision about the move to Aqueduct. It very well may come at the first week in October, but once they get a little handle back downstate about the construction on the arena and the timing and everything else, the 3 o'clock start. But other than that, they're going to take a wait and see. They very well could end up running the Belmont meet as, you know, as normal. So that is not decided officially. And give them a couple of weeks. So there's a couple of things for next. The racing starts on Friday. And, of course, you've already got a big Saturday that was drawn yesterday. Nice third leg of the turf series for three-year-old male and female, the Jockey Club Derby and Oaks, and also that new Grand Prix, the mile and a half. And a very nice couple of cards to start the Belmont meet if you haven't looked ahead to Friday and Saturday. Meanwhile, in addition to New York and the wrap-up there and the wrap-up at Del Mar, we got to talk about the juvenile turf races as well. James Stack came in and upset the juvenile fillies turf at Del Mar yesterday. Yesterday, once more, Irish bred. And I don't think I had a chance to talk about Encoder, Sadler, and Aronis. What a great summer they had, not just John had a great summer, obviously, with the Sadler, with the Aronis team, but his other clients as well. But in Coder, the English Channel, that won that juvenile turf. We're hoping to talk to John Sheriffs today, actually, about Nolde and the Derby win on Sunday. Haven't got to that. And then around the rest of the ovals yesterday and Sunday, stuff that I haven't had a chance to do, like Divisadero. And Kelly Rubley won three races over the weekend. Saturday, I think Friday, Saturday, Sunday, three races at three different tracks, and reached out to Kelly as well. Philadelphia yesterday, where you're playing along there a little bit, they had a very good card. They had a really, really nice card. And in addition to watching Saratoga yesterday, I was keeping an eye on the action at Parks and Pure Sensation. And, of course, the Match Series, one more Match Series event yet to come. That'll be a Monmouth. But the two graded stakes yesterday and then the supporting card, Pure Sensation, he's unbelievable. 8 years old, Christophe Clement and the Generazios. Amazing. And he dominated 3-5. Had to survive a inquiry, but he did. And Kate DeMasi with veteran Dubini ran very well and claimed foul on Pure Sensation, but it was not. In fact, somebody else did as well. There were two. I think there were two claims of foul. But Pure Sensation with Paco aboard, Paco sweeping the graded stakes. That Guerrero trainee spun to run. And if you didn't see the Smarty Jones, there were a couple of races some people did not see this weekend, I guarantee, just because there was so much action. And the Smarty Jones, and Smarty paraded yesterday. And if you didn't see the pictures of Pat Chapman, just delighted to be on hand. And you could just tell it was a really nice scene at Parks. And, you know, you got to be a little careful when you get these veteran stallions or retirees and you put the saddle on them and you start parading them. They get keyed up, right? They all of a sudden they get on their toes. It doesn't matter that they're, you know, 16 years old or 50, whatever it is. They remember. Spun to run, though, the hard spun colt. If you go back to the Haskell, Juan Carlos Guerrero was sky high on spun to run, and his coming to hand broke his maiden in June, in January, excuse me, and you know, then an allowance win. He pointed him for the Haskell, got a placement behind the heavy heads, Maximum Security and Mucho Gusto, and then targeted this and the Pennsylvania Derby. And this is a really nice game horse, and he outgamed Gray Magician. And, you know, listen, Gray Magician is not Maximum Security, and he's not even Mucho Gusto, but he's okay. You know, he's a mid-90s, you know, grade 2, grade 3 stake type. And it looked like Gray Magician had him. And Paco perseveres and spun to run. Pull that race up. It's terrific. And then, of course, there was the Vasilika Juliet Foxtrot, the John Maybe that was out of this world, and then a race that I guarantee you has somehow gone under the radar. But you had the Florida Stallion races, the Florida Sire Series races at Gulfstream on Saturday. And we got to reach out to Ralph Nix, because Ralph, with the upset, Liam's Lucky Charm. And if you have not seen this, you are missing out, because chance it, the Saffy Joseph, who went off at you know, less than 2-5, the two of them hook up, and it is out of this world. And Liam's Lucky Charm prevails. Really, for Mr. Campbell, and try to get the video. I'll find the link, because when I caught up with it, I was like, wow, look at this. And the thing that alerted me, Liam's Lucky Charm comes out of this with a 91 buyer. This was in the Affirmed, in the girls' race. CeCe's, to give you an idea, CeCe's Valentina came out with a 48. So Liam's Lucky Charm's performance, and chance it, they were 18 lengths ahead of the third place finisher. Yeah, so a couple of nice two-year-olds down in South Florida at this time of the year. And, of course, speaking of South Florida, things, knock on wood, the Bahamas weren't spared, but and I have not seen what the storm is doing this morning. But I checked in with Chuck Simon at one point last night, and Chuck said, well, we're going out to dinner. They barely got a thunderstorm. The craziest thing. And I didn't even ask. I didn't even ask Joe. Joe, everything was okay, right? No. So, you know, for everybody that bought all kinds of non-perishable food, you're going to be eating mac and cheese for a few weeks, I guess, and drinking a lot of bottled water. I don't know. It's hurricane season, right? So I put all that stuff in the garage. Right? I don't know. Joe, how much shopping did you do to stock the house? Lots. Well, I saw pictures. My cousin Debbie, who's down in Boca, she sent a picture, texted a picture to Tina and I of empty shelves at Publix. Joe's got enough water for a month, she says, or two. my cousin Debbie, she would need a map to find the kitchen in her house. She sent a picture. She said, "I'm running around Publix like a maniac." This must have been on Sunday, like 4 o'clock. And the shelves were just empty. There was just nothing. So, for those of you who are famously, you know, procrastinators, you win. Those of you who thought, we'll be all right, you got away with one this time. We've got Don Little Jr. is going to join us, and Kelly Rubley. We'll get Kelly in here. And later, Graham Motion. Graham with a nice weekend. John White, and much more. Jimmy Jerkins, I made that decision yesterday to hold off on Jimmy, just because I figured, you know, I thought Green Light Go would win, and, you know, rather than have him on yesterday, speculate and talk about preservationist. We'd had him on TV too on Sunday with Seth. But it's moving day today. It's always tough. And, you know, barns are packing up. In some cases, you know, you start to send horses back as they run late. Like, I was Sunday morning, I stopped at Gary's barn to say goodbye to the the Phillies, Carlisle Bell had already gone back. And virtually there were only about eight horses left. Gary tried to get in to some races yesterday. He entered five horses, not one made a race. And so they, you know, just keep packing them up and sending them home back to Belmont. But I did say goodbye to Volterine and Minute Mouse. We'll say goodbye to the first half hour here. Back after this, we've got Kelly Rubley. We've got Don Little Jr. And more. At the races, putting a big bow on the summer season. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years. We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and Kent DeSarmo on Afternoon Delights, absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Under the island, middle of a mountain, there is a big bad booming system. Blowing speakers, woofers and tweeters, amplifiers, melted wires. The party's exploded, core is corroded. Underground, the Puget Sound causing a shifting and a drifting. Big black boom.
We're back. About 25 to the top of the hour. Don Little Jr. is going to join us in a minute. And a couple of notes. I went back and was looking at some of the see if some of the figures from yesterday had been posted. And the final number for the futurity actually adjusted up to 68. So the 59, kind of what they call a raw number, and then the final number once they folded in track speed and whatnot. So a 68, still not a sparkling thing for the futurity, but it is certainly better than the 59 that came out early. So 68, the final fig, and the favorite, the favorite. Not being able to make it all the way around because of the incident. So we'll just have to wait. We'll have to wait and see. Let's just say keep the jury out on the West Coast. I have every confidence that the West Coast will produce. I mean, considering that Eight Rings had run a 94 in his debut win, I would not indict the West Coast males just yet. So we're back with our first conversation, though. And speaking of figures, it's been a great summer. Preservationist comes out of the Woodward with another mid-aught performance, a 106, and a absolutely thrilling edition of the Woodward. And particularly satisfying for Centennial, Don Little Jr., who's joining us, and Jimmy Jerkins and the team after a disappointment, let's say, in the Whitney, and another opportunity to grade one in the handicap division, and Preservationist, who's having his most complete season, capitalizes. Don, congratulations.
Thanks, Steve. It was quite a thrilling day, exciting day, and as always, great to be back with you, and for a good reason.
Well, it is a good reason, and Jimmy was with us on Sunday on TV,
and
he was so funny because here's Preservationist, and a lot of the stories started to be written after the Suburban, and mm-hmm. your patience and his horsemanship and the way you guys have worked together so successfully for so long and paying such great dividends. But what a crazy situation with Preservationist, who was clearly had come into the Whitney a little distracted.
Yeah, he was. I mean, it's funny when you say a horse is green at age six, but it was all new to him. I mean, the crowd, the two turns. I mean, yes, it was. You could say the Suburban was two turns, but it really wasn't. It was an angle in two turns. And it was just a whole new experience. He hadn't seen that crowd. He did get washed up. Junior, I thought, despite everything, did a very good job taking his feet out of the irons and taking him over to the crowd to look at it a little bit, to hopefully maybe calm him down. Unfortunately, I think it probably backfired a little bit, but he sort of learned from that. I mean, he did learn from that. It was obvious, and Jimmy did a phenomenal job taking him over the paddock twice between the Whitney and the Woodward. And I mean, I was there the Wednesday before the Woodward, and the difference in the horse schooling was quite visible. And it was gave everybody a good feeling.
The situation with apparently one filly around the barn, another problem, because he's six, he's not a gelding, he's a horse, and he was clearly, Jimmy says there was one particular filly they had to move things and move some horses around because she was driving him crazy, and it was taking away from his focus.
Yeah, no, it does. And, she was one of those fillies that was sort of constantly in heat. And luckily, he had three stalls in the neighboring barn. And, he picks that up pretty quickly, and Jimmy does, and, moved everything around. And, that absolutely helped. And, You know, I wouldn't say he's crazy, Studdish. I mean, he doesn't try to go, but, you know, it is what it is. And yeah. That's nature. And focus in races like this is an important thing because when he is focused, as you saw on Saturday, and his physical presence, I guess you could say, is almost overwhelming. He's just a big, strong, imposing individual when he's got his mindset.
Take us back to the period of time, Don, and how you talk to the partners and ask everybody to be patient and also justify having to, you know, finance those extended breaks. And explain what goes into being patient.
Well, I think the fact of the matter is the excitement and the expertise and the horsemanship involved with the original and still existing Centennial team, manager, Dr. Carr, the people at the farm, Paula Parsons, of course, Jimmy, saw the true talent in this individual right from the get-go. And it was what they relayed to me, which I am sort of the bearer of the flag, I guess you could say, and have to educate partners in situations like that. I mean, all that starts from the beginning. You know, when you have people that are interested in getting in this game, you have to educate them right from the beginning so it doesn't come as a surprise, and they get it, and they understand it a little bit, that it is risk. It's not going to happen overnight. If it does, it's very atypical. And, you know, horses are like any athlete. Some take longer to grow up and some don't. And, you know, from our experience, you look at all of our best horses over the years, their best campaigns have come as 4- and 5-year-olds. Now we can say 6. And, yes, it's different, but, you know, there were a lot of concessions made to get him here. You know, Jimmy at one point, and I think even was quoted in this in the papers and press, that he was willing to basically train the horse for nothing. And, of course, we wouldn't allow that. But, you know, when you get that feedback from the people that are involved with your horses and taking care of them on a day-to-day basis, you know, you put your trust in them, and that's what you hired them to do. And I think... you know, everybody that had seen this horse, you know, I knew he had the talent, but, you know, I'm not the one that's going to make the call because I'm not there day to day. But when you see him, when I saw him training, when he was, you know, spot on right, it was something to behold. And his breezes looked like those normal gallops. And you know, the patience that Steve and Jimmy had and what they saw in this horse, you know, it was pretty convincing that it was worth doing whatever we had to do to make it happen.
The origins, I mean, he was almost $500,000 yearling. Mm-hmm. And I know that, you know, everybody last week when that ad about the Phipps male yearlings that are being offered at Keeneland, books 2, 3, and 4, and when I see Flying Dixie, that, you know, that's a big name, Emory Hamilton, and
yeah.
You know, certainly, you know, when you pay $500,000 for a yearling, you've got certain expectations, and you ended up, you know, you're obviously in a position that he's making himself into a stallion. He's a son of Arch, yeah. And you know, the payoff here is, you know, it seems to be at hand.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think, and, you know, you go back to, say, Emory Hamilton and King Ranch. I mean, you can't, you know, when they had their horses in the sale, I mean, this isn't the first one we've tried to buy. And we, when your dad was at the forefront of everything, you know, we've tried to, or we've bid on unsuccessfully numerous King Ranch colts out of those successful families. We knew them quite well because Scotty Schulhofer trained a couple of them, you know, and mm-hmm. we were in the same barn when I think he had, I forget exactly which one, but you know, when Colonial Affair and Rubiano were there, some of those King Ranch fillies were in the barn with us. And this was the first one that we were literally able to afford. And, you know, I remember when the hammer fell, everybody, Dr. Carr and Paula, were looking at other yearlings, you know, because it was the September sale, so we had to keep ahead of the game, if you will, and they were looking at others. They were like, well, we probably won't be able to get that one, but, you know, you stay here and bid on them. And then when I called Steve and let him know, I mean, it was elation, really. I mean, everybody was thrilled, and so we had high hopes from the get-go, but as you well know, not every half a million, $1 million, $16 million horse doesn't make it. And, I mean, that's just part of the game. I mean, nobody knows that the number one draft choice of the NFL, the NHL, whatever it may be, it's going to be the superstar. You just hope. You go on what you see, what the pedigree has, and for the true horseman, what your gut is.
Well, it certainly, when you put together a season and that includes a Suburban win and now a Woodward win, and basically positions you, you know, just perfectly into the fall, a Breeders' Cup opportunity in sight, and you know, I could tell from Jimmy that you know, the trip out to California wouldn't be his first preference as a no. as a trainer, but you know, give us a feel for, you know, your thoughts over the next couple of months leading in.
No, as you said, if you were to say, well, back in January, this is where we'll be with this horse, we knew the potential was there. We hope things fell into place as it has. You know, it would be a lot easier if you were saying that the Breeders' Cup was at Churchill Downs. I'd feel a lot better if it was, but it is what it is. You know, east, it's funny, when horses ship east to west, they don't acclimate for whatever reason as well as horses coming from west to east. You know, and it is a small, as Jimmy was quoted in a few things, he has a small operation. You know, and I think in order to be successful in California, that you do have to send your horse out there fairly early. You know, everybody has their own theories. But I would think you'd want to send the horse out there a couple weeks ahead of time, not 2 or 3 days ahead of time. I've learned some of that from when I was playing polo and bringing horses from Argentina. You know, you got to have, there's an acclimation period. There's two options. You bring them up, you play them, you get right on them, and you go, and they last about 2 weeks, and then that's it. And then you got to give them 6 months off, or you bring them up and give them the 6 months and then go on. So there is an acclimation period. I think, you know, there's another step between here and there. You know, I think if you did well in the Jockey Club Gold Cup, there would be, I wouldn't say pressure. Jimmy has the green light from us to do as he sees fit. We're not helicopter owners. We're going to let him make the decisions, because typically the horseman that's there day to day sees things and makes the right call. And, as you know, in this business, when you start making plans with horses, it doesn't take long for them to fall apart. And I think it's, we're fortunate to have Jimmy with us. And, yes, it's exciting. And that's what it's all about. And, hopefully things continue in the way they're going now. And I think that, the partners, it was very emotional Saturday, not just for the people that have been directly involved with the horse, but the partners that have been so patient as well. There were many tears in the circle that day. And it's been an honor and privilege to you know, have them involved with us because they're such great people. And, you know, they don't deserve enough because they're sort of in the back, you know, the behind the scenes, if you will, as are the grooms and the people involved in the day-to-day operation. But, you know, it's a team effort. And, you know, they deserve this just as much as anybody else.
Now, for Centennial, it also marks, and you could see how emotional it was for you, too. And
yeah,
very much so. And it's the third grade one winner. And, you know, it's very notable at the high level at which Centennial operates when you see that the three grade ones are the Metropolitan, the Wood Memorial, and the Woodward. And these are, you know, these are the august races in New York and on the American racing scene. And, you know, to go to the next level, to, you know, to win a Breeders' Cup, obviously, with him would, you know.
Well, you can't forget the Belmont and the Acorn either.
That's right. That's right. I'm not, that's right. I'm not even including, that's right.
Colonial. And, that,
yeah.
I mean, you think about, you know, we buy, well, now, at this juncture of the company, we buy 6 to 8 horses a year. That's it. And, you know, you can go back the last 29 years of, or 35 years, all we've had, at 29 of the years we've been in existence, we've campaigned a stakes horse. 29 of the 35. And of those 6 years, 4 of them were, we bred a stakes winner. In other words, stakes winners from stallions that we had. So for the amount of horses we buy annually, I think that's a
high percentage.
A record that is probably second to none.
On that topic, too, I'd love for you to riff on Wicked Strong. And,
yeah.
You know, his start is very solid for, you know, considering that he's a relative bargain at Spendthrift, $7,500 he's standing for. And he's 7 for 28 with his runners so far. He's had 28 hit the racetrack, and
yep.
He's hitting at 25%.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I think, you know, it's a, you know, there's people that think, oh, we're going to retire this horse and make him a stud. Well, it doesn't happen. It's just like racing. You know, I mean, on the other hand, you can look at our fabulous Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile winner, Corinthian. I mean, he had everything going for him. He wins the Met Mile. He won the inaugural Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile at Monmouth in the Slop, and he had a pedigree that was impeccable and, you know, sold him for quite a bit of money. And, he was popular as could be. And, you know, he just nothing. He had a couple of decent horses, but nothing to warrant him staying in Kentucky. And so it's just as risky as a racing campaign. And so it's, you know, we strictly are a racing partnership. But if people do want to stay in on the racing breeding side, that opportunity is there. I mean, we still own an interest in Unified. I think he's going to be something to watch as well. And, you know, it's nice to see, it's nice to tell people that, well, oh yeah, here's this one, you know, Warfront's out of Starry Dreamer, who is by far Rubiano's best filly, and, you know, what the influence that has had in this breeding, in the bloodlines of the American thoroughbred now. And so that's sort of a gratifying thing, and the partners realize that as well.
And it's funny you bring up the breeding side, and you know it's a different kind of an era, and mm-hmm. You know there's plenty of outfits that the partners are as intrigued by pinhooking, for instance, proposition, as they are by winning on the racetrack. And, you know, so there's a bit of a cross-pollination to that degree. I mean, do you find people that come to you more interested in the breeding by
chance?
Not
as much. I mean, I think people realize that we really are just primarily a racing team. operation. We've had people say, well, why don't we go back to buying fillies? And, you know, if there was, you know, we might present to the partners, like, is there anybody that wants to buy some fillies? If there's enough interest, of course, we'll be able to do that. But I think nowadays, where we have been so successful at getting a colt to become a stallion, most people realize that's what we do best, and why change it? And the fact of the matter is, people are doing this for the excitement, the camaraderie, the experience, and I truly believe, though it's not as documented as much as I think it should be, I think people are, some of the partners in Centennial strictly have a financial interest on the tax side of it. You know, it takes a few years to have it cycle through, but once they've been involved for two or three, or 3 to 5 years, you know, with the accelerated depreciation, when you're buying and putting together a new partnership, and you've closed out another one, the people can take the write-off from one that's closed, and therefore participate in a new one, and it kind of, on a financial side, from the tax ramifications, it's pretty beneficial to people that they can, you know, look at it that way. And I don't think this business, this industry, emphasizes that enough, because it can be a very beneficial situation.
It's interesting, and to be honest, Don, we've had a lot of conversations with partnership managements, and I think you're the first to bring it up.
Yeah, I mean it's a very attractive part of the whole thing. Yes, the fun, the camaraderie, the excitement is the key thing. But if it is presented, or if people can look at their other investments, whether it's other LLCs that create an income stream, there's opportunities with the depreciation horses and expense allowance to offset some of those gains in other operations. So there, you know, I've talked to people at NYRA about this, maybe doing something together and trying to emphasize that, because they're 14 miles from the, you know, one of the most economically charged cities in the world. You know, going to talk to some investment firms and accounting firms about some of these things to try to encourage new ownership. And, you know, horse racing is healthy right now. You know, people say there aren't enough horses in this business, but you know, I've always thought that, like anything, oversupply, too much product can be harmful, and I, not to knock anybody or any business, but, you know, I think it's healthy where it is right now. And we don't need any more horses born every year. We have enough. And there's more retirement foundation organizations cropped up now than there ever was.
True.
So that has helped the image and the reputation. So I, from my perspective, I think the horse business is very healthy right now.
And it's nice to hear. It's nice to hear somebody say it and be positive about it. Speaking of being positive, tell us about a couple of the horses that we look forward to getting back. I see that Mijos has worked over the summer and seems to be on the right track. And I see that there's one, you know, for anybody that isn't familiar with Centennial, centennialfarms.com, with everything that you'd want to know, including about a candy ride that I can tell you guys are excited about, out of the Empire Maker Mare, Empire Desire, who comes from a very nice black type family that included Sir Cherokee, that Mike Tomlinson won an Arkansas Derby with, and Miss Izella from that, the sister of Miss Izella. Guam Typhoon. This is a nice family. Tell us about this one.
And he actually goes, it was a very competitive sale. Saratoga is a unique sale because it is kind of a boutique and, you know, everybody's there. And powerful owners are teaming up to purchase horses that seem to fit their mold. And, you know, we, again, come back to patience. We had six horses on our list, and he was the final horse of the six. That was not in terms of preference, but just the way the hip numbers were. And, you know, we were close on a couple, I think three of the six were purchased by Mr. Brandt, my friend Peter Brandt, who I've known from the polo world for years. And, you know, we were patient and just waited it out. And, you know, we were fortunate to get him. And, you know, he fits the mold. He's got the female depth that we think, if he is successful, he'll be desirable. He was a one-horse partnership, and all the way we structure things is there's enough capital to cover the purchase price of the horse, of course, as well as a year and a half of expenses through the end of their two-year-old year. And I'm pleased to say, I guess this would be a great time to help sell him, but the partnership is fully capitalized already.
Okay.
And we will be going to, I head to Keeneland on Friday, and we will be putting another partnership, which will be identical to the partnership in terms of structure that Preservationist was in. It'll be a 4 to 5 horse partnership of around $2.5 million. With the focus on probably not everything out of book one, because that will be our price point will be, it'll be too high. Our price point is somewhere between that we feel we can get the pedigree and the individual around $350,000 to $400,000 in that range on average. So if you were to get a $500,000, you know, you might find one for $250,000 or something like that. It's a lot of work. I will say that. It's a lot of work.
No doubt.
But, you know, he's got everything going for him. He's got a rider on his back already. He's doing some early training. In terms of other two-year-olds that we've got that we're very excited about, it's a horse called Ethos that we bought at the Fasig Tipton two-year-old sale in February. We don't buy a lot of horses out of there, but he was an exceptional individual, and he's getting quite a bit of buzz. By Ghost Zapper, out of a sister to Ironicus from the family of Roar and Eastern Echo. We paid $500,000 for him. He's pretty spectacular, I would say. The yearling we bought last year at Saratoga, an Uncle Mo called Magic Mojo, is a nice colt. Centurion, he's a Pioneer of the Nile. I mean, these are all two-year-olds that we were looking forward to coming up. And, of course, our next to be six-year-old, Rocketry, who's five, will be running on Saturday in the renamed Temperance Hill, Belmont on Saturday.
Hey, well,
the Grand Prix or Belmont? I don't know what it's. I'm kidding.
Dave Grenning and I were laughing. It's the race with eight names. It's the only thing missing is presented by Run Happy.
It's
the craziest
thing we get.
It's enough already. But
we won't go there.
It's the Grand Prix American Jockey Club.
There we go. Sounds good.
It does. It's nice. The thing is, it almost sounds like a show ring. That when you put Grand Prix on, it makes you think. It makes you think Hunter Jumper.
I mean, I looked at my five. I was walking through the barn here in Ipswich this morning, and I was looking at the stall plaques on two of them, which was the International Grand Prix, International Federation of Grand Prix Jumping Tour 2004. Well, that's when my dad took a horse over to Saint-Tropez and Monte Carlo to compete in horse shows, and it's exactly right. It's like, well, that kind of sounds like the name of the racer. Rocketry's running him on Saturday. But I guess that, I mean, does that mean that we have, we'll, nobody can beat the Temperance Hill track record anymore, so we'll just hold that for life?
Perfect, perfect.
That's a good way to look at it.
He's been. I'm not a huge fan of paving over races personally, but I get it. You know, there's ways to there's better ways to do that. But you've got. I'm just looking actually, and there's a bunch of horses that we saw, you know, over the summer. Candy Graham, for instance, and.
Yep.
Then there's the
He could have been. He's easily will be a stakes horse. He just happened to be sick out of that race. Unfortunately, it was a. And but he'll be back. There's a horse by the name of Illudare, another Go Zapper. I think he's coming back to Jimmy in next day or two. Once everything's settled in at Belmont, he's a nice Go Zapper on the grass that I think has stakes potential. It's been, again, I can't thank Dr. Carr and Paula and the people involved. I mean, this is a team effort, and, it's just a testament to the people involved from top to bottom.
Well, it starts with the tradition, that your late father, Doolittle, began and carried on by you, and it just has been a standard, really a placid and consistent model in the game for years.
And it's worked, and you know, we've tweaked a few things, and I was talking, my wife and I were talking last night, and I said, there's a really deep gratification, and that's why I was so emotional on Saturday, because, you know, when we won the Whitney, my father wasn't there because he was abroad on business, and, you know, I really thought of him that day, and it was very emotional, and, you know, to have a, and to Jimmy's testament, too, to have a father-son, you know, next generation carry on the business that was started, you know, that doesn't always happen.
No.
You know, you wish that I wish my sons were a little bit more involved in it, but, you know, it's their life to choose what they do, and sometimes family businesses get blown up when it's forced upon them, and it's just really neat, and, you know, it's a proud moment, and, you know, I tell partners that, and it wouldn't be possible without them. And they're all friends of mine. They're not clients. They're friends.
And that's the way it's supposed to be.
Absolutely.
And I can, and that extends to the training side too. Mm-hmm. I have said this so many times since he said it himself on the show when TJ Kelly, Tommy Kelly. Talked about the trainer ownership connection, and he said when you hire a trainer, you're essentially buying a friend.
Yeah.
and I always got a kick out of that, and it's a big part of, you know, it's a big part of understanding having long-standing relationships and stability in the game and loyalty. Yeah. and how that, you know, how that works. And, I said it to Jimmy, most recently, I suppose, in the last couple of years when, you know, Jimmy had a period where, you know, some clients had dwindled. You were key, and your loyalty helped sustain him through a difficult period. And, you know, then subsequently, the addition of Stronach and a couple of other new clients,
I had some partners, to be honest with you, that wanted to do as everybody else, and I stuck my feet in the ground and said, no, this is, we're staying with Jimmy. And I mean, there was a risk of losing them, but one thing I've learned, and I learned it from my father, I learned it from a gentleman by the name of Dennis Dimmerman, who was on the board of the New York Racing Association for years and was vice chairman of General Electric, was a longtime partner of Centennial's. And, you know, one of the main things and most important things in life that I've learned, that loyalty and commitment go a long way in this, in life. And, you know, it all pays off in the long run. And I think that's, you know, it's proven itself out. I mean, it really has.
Absolutely. And a perfect coda to the conversation. Don Little Jr., as always, a pleasure. I love checking in with you on occasions like this. Congratulations, and we'll look toward the Gold Cup and beyond.
Steve, thank you very much, and you know, happy to be available whenever you need it. So.
Well, when you're winning races like Woodwards and Suburbans and...
happy to talk when we're not, too. It's always a pleasure.
A great opportunity. And for those that want to learn more, CentennialFarms.com. And you can pick up the phone anytime and talk to Don Little Jr. And he'll put you in the game the right way. I appreciate it, Don.
All right, Steve. Thanks.
Talk soon. Don Little Jr., Centennial. What a fun visit. Let's take a break here past the top of the hour. And I know Kelly Rubley's waiting to talk to us. We got Kelly coming, and we'll stay in the Mid-Atlantic with Graham Motion, who could be anywhere among eight racetracks or at Fairhill. There's no way to know. We'll talk to Graham in a little bit, John White, and more back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breeds on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions three straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our racehorse development fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Pick on Sirius XM Radio.
Back at the races, 15 into hour two after a terrific half hour with Don Little Jr. And you got some plain talk from Don about being in the business on the partnership side. Kelly Rubley joining us now, and Kelly being lifted higher and higher constantly, now a multiple graded stake winning trainer. Divisadero adding a second graded stake to Kelly's resume, and that, of course, came at Monmouth over the weekend in the Red Bank, but it completed about as unique a three-race win streak, Kelly, as anybody's going to have. It started at Delaware Park with the maiden breaking Shake the Moon. Then it moved to Saratoga on Saturday when Arafana came up and was terrific in that allowance win. We'll talk about that. And then on Sunday, Divisadero, three straight wins, you saddled, and it completes there. And then even yesterday, nice third place finish for Top Line Growth in the Smarty Jones. Not a bad week. Congratulations.
Thank you. I wish they were all like that.
Well, you know what? You're very selective and you're very careful. You not that you don't run them when they're right and all that, but you pick spots carefully and judiciously, and you know, this is the result.
Well, that's the goal. So, thank you.
Let's start with the big horse, who is, you know, you're so proud of, and you know, I see on social media plenty of doting over Divisadero. Nice to, you know, to get him a win like this. Talk about the Red Bank on Sunday.
Well, I mean, obviously, this is such a nice horse, and to finally get him back to the winner's circle meant the world to all of us. You know, he has a lot of support and a lot of fans following him. So I think I wasn't alone in my excitement for him in that race.
When you get to this juncture with a horse, age-wise, and when, you know, when we saw this with Kieran, in fact, yesterday, Kurban, you know, was a year between wins. And it wasn't like he wasn't competitive. And same thing is true with Divisadero. And he's always been, even going back to Buff, Kelly, he's always been kind of a circumstance horse.
He is. You know, he kind of needs the right pace in the race. And but it's not that he doesn't try it. I mean, he shows up every time. Even if he's fourth, he's only beat a length, you know, I mean, which is typical turf racing. But you just can't take it away from how hard this horse tries every time you take him to the races.
Has there been, I mean, in terms of picking spots, and obviously you spent, you know, the last couple tries at Monmouth with him, with the nice program there, but, you know, in terms of shopping courses and distances and spots, what goes into that with him?
Well, you know, obviously, I don't know that the distance is such a big deal. I think it's great now that he's won at the graded level from a mile all the way to a mile and an eighth. Pretty much it comes down to what the field looks like and if I think it's going to suit his running style. I mean, we had him nominated to four different spots going into this weekend, and luckily I picked the right one.
that helps. Give us some feel about the race and I don't want to leave out the portion that Julian Pimentel plays. Julian actually was along for all three of these wins, right?
Actually, he was. He rode all three, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I do, yeah. Nice.
No, he's been a wonderful benefit to the barn. He comes once a week and works a lot of horses for me, and I think we've built a kind of a trust relationship, and it's working. So, you know, and he's a really good rider, so he was very patient with the Visadero. I love the fact that he saved all the ground and he didn't pull him out in the turn. You know, he waited right to the top of the stretch, and that's how this horse wants to run. He wants to run on the outside, but I think sometimes we get a little too aggressive early on, and then he just misses, and it's been frustrating. So it was a perfect execution on Sunday.
What kind of opportunity do you, you know, there's plenty that goes on through the fall. Are his days of grade one competition behind him, or is it strictly a matter of, you know, if he's feeling good that you're willing to, you know, go back up against the heavy heads?
You know, I wouldn't say that they're behind him. It was really important that we win yesterday or Sunday. Again, it's going to come down to finding the right spot. And if it happens to be a grade one and it's the place where we need to be, then I think he'll be extremely competitive there. So I wouldn't say it's behind us just yet. And I don't know where we're going exactly yet, but we'll work out a few options and pick the one that looks to be the most appropriate spot for him.
And I'm just going back historically and looking. I was curious. He has run at Keeneland.
He has. Yes, actually, not with me. Last year, we were scratched in the gate.
That's right.
He's not your best-behaved horse in the gate. He likes to kick, and he just so happened to get his hind leg up over the doors last year, which was very disappointing and frustrating. But he was fine, you know, just a couple of nicks here and there. So I think that was the most important thing, is that we walked away from it in one piece.
And the reason I bring it up is because, of course, the year before, he was actually a very good fourth, beaten two in the Shadwell, and he also came close earlier in his career in an allowance at Keeneland. You know, it is that sand-based course, and he has run well, of course, at Churchill as well. So that kind of a trip might make some sense. No,
absolutely. We will definitely take a look at that race, as well as a few others. No commitments yet, but I wouldn't rule it out.
I got to ask. I mean, for those that might not have remembered, he was beaten less than a length in the Breeders' Cup last year. for those that forgot that, are you trying to get back to the Cup?
I wouldn't say that it's been an active goal at this point. I think just getting this horse a graded win was the focus, and so now we can relax and have a little fun. So, you know, we'll see where it takes us. Not so sure that we would go to Santa Anita, but I wouldn't say we wouldn't if we qualified.
And I was going to say, this was big because it gets you some, you know, in terms of the point structure and the way in which the grading and the mile, you know, invariably oversubscribes. So, you know, this would go a long way, as would a good showing or even a win in the Shadwell, if that's going to be the next, you know, the next spot. And I will say one thing, you know, from a figure standpoint, he had a 97 in the Woodbine Mile, which is what he earned here before he ran the 100 in the mile, to be beaten, you know, by the likes of Expert Eye, Catapult, and Analyze It. I mean, if they run that race, Kelly, 100 times, he wins a few of them.
Agreed. I mean, that was a very exciting race, and we were so proud of him. Certainly, obviously, we wish he'd been up a little bit closer, but, you know, it was fun. It was my first experience in the Breeders' Cup, and what a great ride this horse has taken us on.
Well, it continues, and you keep him in fine form at age seven. And he's a horse. He is not a gelding. We just had a conversation with Don Little about Preservationist, who's six. Here's the Visadero, seven. And what is the status in terms of the Gunpowder Team? And there's got to be interest in standing him, Son of Kitten's Joy.
Yeah. Airdrie Stud is involved in that aspect of it. So it's kind of a joint conversation of when is the right time to make that move.
And I'll speak for you and say maybe after his 8-year-old season.
Kind of. And you know, watching him on Sunday, I'm with you on that. I would love that to continue. As long as he's sound and he's healthy and he's loving what he's doing, I'd love to keep running him. So we'll see.
Well,
the second he tells us he's not the same horse, then you know what? Then he deserves to move on to his next career. But thus far, he's not telling us that.
Well, and with Brary Jones involved as a partner, Airdrie, whenever the time is right, off he'll go to a second career. Let's talk about, since I've got it right here in my hand, Top Line Growth and another board hit, another nice performance in, you know, one of those 3-year-old restricted events. This feels like a horse that is still evolving.
He is, and I think that's the biggest thing to take note on this horse is he is very mentally immature. He just still thinks that everything's a big game. He does everything right, and he's very well behaved, but I think the light bulb is still flickering, and he's going to continue to improve. I have a lot of confidence in this horse, and I'm looking forward to him in the future.
Does the future include the Pennsylvania Derby after that run yesterday?
No.
All right.
I don't think it. That's going to come up a really solid
yes.
field. And I don't think that we're quite mature enough to be competitive in that field at this point in his life. I think you'll see him in big places in the future, but maybe not this month.
Well, fair enough. And, you know, he's by Tapizar. He's a gelding. It's not as if you need to be, you know, creating some sort of a stallion resume with him. So, you know, chasing grade ones at this time of year, not a priority. But this was another good performance. And for those that forget, you know, he was put up in the Iowa Derby. Then the West Virginia Derby kind of it was blown apart by Mr. Money. So everybody was an also-ran there. He was fourth. But a board hit here, grade three. Smarty Jones, Top Line Growth, and the Elkstone Group, of course, Mr. Grant, and he's got an interesting pedigree that I never really noticed either. Between Tapizar, which may contribute to part of his maturity process.
Yeah.
This Tappet is just, you know.
And he's a big horse, you know. I mean, it took me a long time to get him to the races just because he was a big growing boy. And so I think, you know, he will continue to mature and he will continue to improve throughout the rest of his career. He's exciting. He's a fun horse to have in the barn.
Were you surprised that, I mean, was it strategic conversation with Joe Bravo to have him, you know, as close as he was yesterday?
Well, I think he broke on top, so it would be
foolish
to take him back, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Take what comes naturally, and I thought he was in a good position, and he ran a very nice race, and he was competitive, and the two that beat him were a little better than him yesterday.
No, and that's, you know, that happens. That's part of the. I remember. I asked Tom Proctor one time. I said, Tom, what happened? What happened with so-and-so? We got beat by a better horse.
Yeah.
that's the greatest. That's fair enough, Tom.
Yep.
Always a good answer. Yeah, we got outrun.
Yep.
Well, on that front, Arafana outran everybody. And, you know, it was interesting, Kelly, you know, listening to and reading some of the analysis for Saturday at Saratoga, and at first it seemed that, you know, the at least from the handicapping community, Arafana was being a little discounted, but then she went out and got bet and ended up ultimately going favored. And
right.
certainly the betting public endorsed her, even if, you know, some of the handicapping cognoscenti were iffy on her. You know, she came up, you know, with the one, you know, the maiden win, and she was, you were giving away a lot of experience in that allowance spot.
Yeah. But I think, you know, a lot of thought went into picking that spot. And unfortunately, again, we're late to the scene. There's not many straight three-year-old allowance races left out there. So it was either run in a three-year-old stake or try her against older horses. And from day one, we have thought a great deal of this filly. So I think putting her in that spot, obviously it turned out to be a good choice. But I was happy to see her take on that competition because it kind of just proves that we were right thinking a lot of her early on. So, but I think she gets discounted because it was a maiden win at Lowell, not in New York, and you know she did win by 10 and she did it easily. But I think probably some of the handicappers were holding that against her. But once you look at her in the paddock, she's a beautiful filly. She's very, very nice looking filly. So I think that helps with us ending up going off favorite.
Well, she improved from a fig standpoint, went from the 70 in the maiden win to an 84 here. So she's headed in the right direction. She's a gunpowder homebred. She's a Curlin filly out of the nice Vaucluse, the AP Indy mare. Ropera is a partner in Arafana. How did that happen?
Well, actually, there's three new partners involved.
Who else?
After the maiden win, obviously, we got a lot of phone calls to purchase her outright, and I think Gunpowder just really wanted to stay in the game, and Ropera was the first one to come on. But he and Gunpowder have a relationship. They have their stallion at his farm in Kentucky, so
nice.
I think it was a natural move for him to join on.
Very nice. Oh, and I see, okay, and the Roths came in, as did Gainsway.
Yes. So we've got three new partners, which was exciting. I had never met the Roths, so they were in Saratoga, so that was fun.
Well, I'm sure you hit it right off. And this is nice for you to get a chance. Could mean horses from L&J, and this is a nice turn of events. No,
absolutely, yes, certainly it. It broadens my horizons as far as my career, and I'm very thankful for that.
I love it. What's next? What are you going to look at with Arafana?
Again, she seems to come back from the race in great form, so we're going to take a look. I mean, we'll have several options out there, and hopefully we'll pick the right course. Certainly, Keeneland. I mean, there's so many options coming up, so we'll take a peek.
Certainly from a breeding standpoint, the stretch out, it doesn't have to come immediately. I mean, you could seeing a horse win like this and perform at 7/8, I mean, she seems to have really the perfect style, for elongated sprints, one turn mile, 7/8, but she's certainly bred to go a route of ground.
And she trains like she'll go a route of ground. But I didn't want to do that in our next start. Obviously, Saratoga only offers a mile and an eighth or seven, so I thought a mile and an eighth would be a bit aggressive. So, obviously, eventually, yes, the goal will be to stretch this filly out a little bit and see. And, she'll tell us what the best distance is for her.
Well, this was a family of Eugene Melnick, Vaucluse, sister of Luke's Alley, and with the Curlin on top, obviously a very, very nice filly, and a lot of blue sky yet to go ahead and face Elders at this time of year. That in itself, Kelly, is a glowing endorsement.
Yeah, we were very impressed with her.
Well, as as was everyone. Well, that gets us to the horse that started the whole sequence, and we haven't talked much this summer about Delaware, but this is the owner, Alberto Astudillo, and a Maryland bred, a Sipion filly, breaks the maiden and took a few tries to do it, but what do you got here?
You know, we ran her first time when she moved into my barn. She's actually owned by one of my riders.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so it was really super special, especially to win maiden special weight for him. We started her on the dirt, and, you know, she ran fourth. She was okay. And actually, Julian said to me, "Have you thought about grass?" And I said, "Actually, I have." So we put her in on the grass next time for 25, and she was very competitive and just got caught at the wire by one of Proctor's horses. And this race came up at, I was actually holding out to run her in the 40 at Laurel, and it didn't go before they closed down and went to Timonium. So this race came up at Delaware, and I thought, let's give it a shot. And it worked. She ran a heck of a race, and she continues to improve as well. She's a nice filly. And it's just so exciting because her owner's a, you know, nice kid, and it was fun.
That's great. Every so often you see notes online about, you know, about that kind of somebody that either bred one and you know, is behind the scenes on the backstretch or on a team. And that's great. I love it. You know, I also note that, you know, you're one of the operations. We're going to talk to Graham Motion in about a half hour. And yesterday, Mike Trombetta, you know, you also are in that camp and that situation where you can take advantage of so many condition books. And, you know, I'm just looking up and down between Monmouth and Laurel and Presque Isle and Saratoga. I mean, you pretty much are availing yourself of all the opportunities.
Absolutely. I think that's one of the wonderful things and one of the many reasons that I'm here at Fair Hill, just because we have so many options and put a lot of miles on my car, but it's worth it in the end.
Well, that's a line from, what was that from? From Broadway, I think it was from Broadway, Danny Rose. You got to have good tires to be in this business. That's I love
true.
It. Looking ahead this week, I saw that. Let me see. You got a couple in coming up. I know, of course, the Laurel meet with Timonium. Did you run anything at Timonium the last couple of weeks?
I have never run at Timonium. No.
Oh, you got to run at Timonium. That's
maybe.
And you can watch the race from the. Well, you can watch the race from the Ferris wheel.
Right. I'll pass.
Let's start with coming up. Let's see, on Thursday, Dixie Cannon at Delaware.
Yeah, we like this filly, and I think the shortening to a 7.5 will be ideal for her. She's actually a New York bred.
Yeah,
and it's possible. You know, she continues to improve as well, so she may make her way up to New York. But I think it's important that we prove ourselves down here first, and luckily her owners are on board with that. So we look forward to that race.
She's a Freud out of a Dixie Union filly, and again, monitoring, you know, monitor condition books and see if you can't find the spot. And then Laurel, of course, I think opens on Friday, and the Saturday card already drawn, and Pretty Good Year, which certainly describes what you've got going on. It's more than a pretty good year. This is a great notion, Maryland bred for leadoff stable.
Yeah. Pretty Good Year. He's a trier. You know, he broke his maiden first out, which sometimes is almost not the best thing that can happen. But I think switching him to turf, he seems to be a lot more comfortable there. And this looks like a good spot for him.
Pretty Good Year. And looking at the sixth race on Saturday at Laurel. Well, Kelly, from Divisadero all the way down the Shed Row, a lot of good things happening. Clearly, Arafana, we're going to be keeping an eye out. And it's great to get back in touch with you and congratulate you on another graded stake win and lots of good things. Continued success.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Fun to check in with Kelly Rubley and the unique triple that she put together this week, winning first at Delaware, then Saratoga, and then at Monmouth. Three straight starters, and Julian Pimentel aboard for each of them. Kelly Rubley joining us. Let's take a break. John White standing by. We'll check in with John. We'll start to wrap up Del Mar, get some season-ending thoughts. What John, now that he's home from his experience up in Northern Cal at the Humboldt County Fair doing the stewarding, we'll get John's thoughts about the weekend at Del Mar and looking toward the fall back in and around L.A. with some Los Al and of course, the return to Santa Anita toward the Breeders' Cup. And, mentioning Los Al makes me also note, I got to take a look at the – I didn't look yet at the what happened at Ruidoso yesterday. I was trying to keep an eye. Todd Fincher had his first runner. He won the stake at Albuquerque over the weekend. And I know that he finished third in the All-American yesterday. He was having his first runner in the All-American Futurity. But I didn't get the whole story about the winner and what went on yesterday at Ruidoso, the $3 million All-American Futurity. Back after this, though, John White joins us, Graham Motion, in a little bit as well.